Hello and welcome. You're listening to Vivica Widow's Knock Knock, episodes 1 and 2, season 1, narrated by Leo St. Paul. Mia and Jim failed to give a lot to the city. Coalford was a demanding mistress, though. It had earned its nickname as the Shady City, not just because of the gloomy weather, but because everything was there for the taking, for anyone who wasn't hindered by morals or conscience. And Jim was such a man. Whilst the city's funds depleted, he squirreled away as much as he could. There was a war brewing on the streets, and he was damn sure he wasn't going to get caught up in it. Things were going to implode soon. It was only a matter of time. The regeneration projects he had promised during his last campaign were halted by the lawmakers in the city. The poorest area, known as the shanties, had been left off worse than they had ever been. The tradesmen of the city were fighting back. People in high positions, people he considered friends, had pilfered the money away, leaving those lower in the ladder high and dry. As the class war raged, it left no money for the expecting mothers the mayor swore he would help. School budgets were cut to compensate for any losses caused by riots and looting. Only the exclusive Albans boarding school managed to weather the storm. What did it matter? Well, when campaign time came again, he could blame the opposition. He was just dealing with the mess that they'd left behind. Half of the city would believe it, and the other half wouldn't care either way. But he was done with all that. "Will you be home on time?" Sylvia Phelps asked her husband as he prepared to leave. "We have the Wheels coming to dinner," she added. "I need you here." The plan to leave everything behind had been in the works for weeks. The day had finally come. He had enough money to start over now. And when the finances of the city finally tumbled like a house of cards and the war spilled onto the streets, he would be out of the picture. Surely his family would have to face the music at first, but they would get out of it cleanly for the most part. His eldest daughter, Ruby, kissed him. "I'll be at the office this afternoon," she said. "We need to go over a campaign plan." Ruby was her father's daughter in every sense. So like him she was. She had gotten involved in his political career right from the beginning. The day he announced he was running, she was by his side. She had the aspirations on becoming the city's first female mayor. She had a naive view of politics, though. A certain lack of compassion was required, despite what many might argue. And she would learn that soon enough. He stepped outside of his building. People were becoming irate, so he kept his security close. His silver town car wasn't waiting for him at the entrance of the building as it always was. He trusted his driver, Shane. He was nothing if not punctual. He looked at the security guard he was assigned. He was expressionless, with his hands clasped on his stomach. His cold stare was masked behind spectacles. He recognized the man's face. He had been with him before. His name was Marcus, and he wasn't a security guard at all. He was one of the pen triplets who owned the auction house. The car pulled up before he could ask him his business. Mayor Phelps looked at the door of his car. Something had gone awry. His heart increased the tempo of its beat as Marcus Penn reached over and opened the car door. It was really happening. The car pulled close, but Shane in the driver's seat was covered by tinted windows. Marcus leaned over and opened the door. Mayor made to climb in, but he hesitated. A woman was sat waiting for him. She shifted over and patted the seat beside her. "Don't be shy," she said. Her ruby lips curled into a pretty smile. The collar of her grey coat she wore was pulled up around her neck. Marcus pushed him in and sat beside him. "Yeah. Now isn't this cosy?" she remarked. He tried to control his breathing. He called upon every political stoicism he had in the hope he didn't look worried. The sweat gathering on his brow didn't lie. "What do you want?" he asked. The woman looked out of the tinted windows and watched the city pass by at greater and greater speeds. "I just wanted to give you a proper farewell," she replied. "Surely you wouldn't be leaving without saying goodbye to little old me." Fear erupted inside him. He didn't care that he would be leaping from a moving vehicle. He clutched for a door handle, but Marcus snatched his wrist and twisted it, causing the bones to crunch together. "Let me out," he cried. The woman laughed. "Oh, don't worry," she said. "We're not going far. The city wishes to thank you for your service." Her name was Tabitha, and who should have known there would be no escaping. The car stopped. The driver opened the door. It wasn't Shane after all, it was a woman. She wore a plain white blouse and simple black trousers. She had a familiar face, but he couldn't quite place her. If he paid more attention to the people he threw money at, he would recognise her as the scantily clad girl who spent some glorious time on his lap during his last visit to the Knock Knock Club. He had paid her extra to finish the job, but it was all a distant memory now. Tabitha stepped out first. They had parked outside an office block in the business district of City Main, not far from his home in the north side. Marcus pushed the mayor out onto the street. He was escorted into the building. Tabitha was in front of him and Marcus loomed behind him to make sure he wasn't going anywhere. Tabitha said nothing as they climbed the steps. The mayor was sobbing. Each time he thought he had reached the end of his torture, they had another floor to climb. They finally reached the top. Tabitha fished a key from her coat pocket and unlocked the green door that greeted them. The Breckenridge Tower could be seen standing tall across the street. Your daughter wanted to say goodbye. His youngest daughter, Amber, was tied to a table, her arms and legs spread. She had been stripped to her underwear. Jim moved to run to her, but Marcus grabbed him with great clenching hands and pulled him back. The room was empty, save for a chair, a large machete blade that leaned against the wall, and the table that held the 17-year-old girl. Amber's mouth was covered, but she was screaming. Her eyes were wide and terrified. The Breckenridge Financial Firm are one of the largest organizations in the city, and had been for generations. When tensions rose between the north and south of the city, the firm became collateral damage. The office across the street had remained empty ever since the Freefall massacre. 59 people lost their lives when several benefactors and staff fell from the balcony of the penthouse suite. No one dared take over the space again. "Leave her alone," the mayor cried desperately. "She's done nothing to you." Tabitha clutched his face and rested her chin on his shoulder. "You have really pissed me off, Jim. You think you can abandon ship just like that? I have to take out on someone. I wasn't leaving. I just needed time to think. The lawmakers are pushing me more and more. I could come back and I could be of more use to you." Tabitha slid her hand into his pocket and pulled out the flight reservations. She looked at them and dropped them on the floor. "You see," she said, "the thing is, I'd love to believe you. I really would. But this is a one-way ticket, though."
Let her go," the mayor sobbed, tears rolling down Amber's face. "I'll pay anything."
Tabitha shook her head. She stood up straight. "It's not about the money," she stated. "We have that already anyway. This is personal now, cunt." She sat across his lap and kicked her long, slim legs out. "Girl could be insulted with a man running out on her like that. I thought you liked my little club."
I do, protested the mayor.
Tabitha grinned. There was a gap between her front teeth that gave her a quirky, girlish quality. "Well, let's see how much then, shall we?" With a nod to Marcus, he swung the blade and cut her left hand. The sharpened blade swiped through the flesh and bone with ease. Her screams of agony were muffled by the cloth over her mouth. Her father screamed too. He didn't have time to gather himself when Tabitha pointed again for Marcus to cut off her other hand.
"You've made your point," said Jim. "Let her go."
Tabitha gave a raspy laugh and missed the chance to see Marcus at work. The man is an artist. Wouldn't you agree? The mayor tried to push against the bounds. Tabitha was on her feet again. She walked over to the table and took the blade from Marcus. "Tell you what, Jim, I'll give you a choice," she offered. "Since your girl's going to die anyway, I can either continue cutting her up into little pieces or just end it now for her. What do you want me to do?" The mayor sobbed.
"Please, just leave her, just leave her."
"I didn't quite catch that."
"End it," the mayor cried louder. "End it, end it."
He had averted his gaze, unable to see the pained look in his youngest child's face. Her eyes were hazy. She was going to pass out from the blood loss soon.
"Well, if you tell me I'm pretty," Tabitha teased.
"Just kill her. Kill her now, please. Just end her pain," the mayor roared.
Tabitha's grey eyes widened. "That is your daughter," she gasped. She grinned. "You're a nasty piece of work, Jim." She lifted the blade and centered it on Amber's forehead. Before the point penetrated her skull, there was a flash of realization on Amber's face. The mayor cried. He knew he was playing a dangerous game, but never would he have thought it would come to this. He was leaving his life behind for sure, but not in the way he had intended. Tabitha dropped the blade, circled behind him like a predator and began massaging his shoulders. "Well, Jim, we must dash. You know what it's like when I'm away from the knock-knock too long. It can be... well, it can be just murder. Later, cunt." Things have been desperate for the people of Coalford, better known as the Shady City. Once upon a time, executives now reduced to rummaging through their neighbours' trash to find a meal. Many are hunting for shelter wherever they can find it, like stray cats. Their once well-tailored suits now hanging in rags. It's surreal to see once proud captains of industry reduced to the indignity of soup kitchens. Nowhere to go, no means of rising back up to their ivory towers. My name is Sam Crusoe. When the Depression hit, two industries were saved: entertainment and news. People always need to know what's happening in the world, and people always need an escape from their reality. Luckily for me, I'm with the latter. I have been a freelance journalist ever since finishing college. As the financial belt tightened, it was harder and harder to get a full-time position with a newspaper, so I and most of my colleagues went from story to story just trying to make it. Most of my stories sold to the biggest newspaper in the city, the Coalford Daily. I thought I'd managed to successfully navigate through the choppy waters of recession until the day I discovered that beneath the harsh surface lay a more terrifying truth. But I get ahead of myself. I write these notes so that everyone can know the truth. Chances are I will be gone by the time you read this. I feel like I'm on borrowed time as it is. The mayor, Jim Feltz, had disappeared without a trace. That morning he had kissed his wife, a voluptuous and formidable woman named Sylvia, and his eldest daughter, Ruby, goodbye. He straightened his power tie in the mirror and made his way to wade through the city's financial crisis, which, if you were to believe the tabloids, were largely his fault. Normally he would have been escorted to the office by security of some kind. The citizens of the Shady City railed at the very sight of the mayor, only made matters worse. However, that morning he never arrived at his office. Making his way down his street in his luxury silver car was the last anyone saw of him. Some of the neighbours remembered hearing loud music blaring from the open windows as he passed, which was unlike the button-down conservative man that he was. I had been covering the story as it developed. This meant I had been spending more time at the offices of the Daily. The Daily was the only source of news on the mayor by Mrs. Felt's request, and being the area's largest newspaper, it was also the provider of food on my table. Hiring freelancers had been their way of protecting themselves. It meant that they were only paying for the material they needed, without any full-time mouths to feed. I never liked Mayor Feltz. I certainly didn't vote for him. As I pursued the story, I uncovered gambling debts and a mistress at the far end of town. He must have been quite the charmer. When I interviewed his mistress, she told me that he was planning on leaving his wife, which is probably what they all say. On the morning he disappeared, he had been planning to visit her. They were going on a trip together, which is why he had wanted to be discreet. The mistress, Cindy, had waited for him for most of the morning in her lavish apartment that the city coin had paid for. She flipped between anger and worry as she did. By 2 in the afternoon, the police swamped her, acting quicker for such a public figure than they would have for any other ordinary citizen. Neither his wife, his mistress, nor his gambling associates could offer the police any idea as to where he went. So on that warm morning, I made my way to the stretch of tower blocks that housed the newsroom in the north side. My mind was occupied by ways I could spin the same story or offer a new angle. Close to the office, the clang of metal bins falling over drew my attention. From behind the cans crawled a man. He was young, filthy, and with a mop of thick hair. Like many of the others forced to live on the streets, he sat with his back against the wall and brought his knees to his chest. His eyes were dulled by the effects of alcohol. He had a core of an apple and made breakfast of it. Sights like these were shocking when the recession first hit, but they became more common, and so you no longer noticed. The mighty had fallen and the rest of us became desensitized to their plight. I gave him what coins I had left. With very little I could do to help him, I entered the tall grey building with the large towering sign on top that read Coalford Daily. The newsroom was hot and thick with the smell of coffee. Full-time reporters had become scarce, but those of them who did remain in work dashed back and forth, trying to perfect their articles. Nothing quite so stimulating as a looming deadline. The brown leather satchel that I always carried my articles in was dropped on an unoccupied table. I rested at the desk, drew out my notes, and began to review them. I had to ignore all the hum and chatter around me to focus on the words. "Hey Sam," came the voice of Madeline Lauer. I looked up briefly, acknowledged her presence with a smile. Madeline and I had been friends since college. She too was a freelance writer, although she would admit her stories weren't selling as well. I don't think my writing was any better than hers, it's just that the editor, Eric Waddle, was a bit of a chauvinist, and with articles of hers he did accept were probably grudged. "Maybe if I slept with him he would change his mind," she had said. She was joking, of course, but everyone had their motives in the Shady City, so it
Wouldn't surprise me. Madeline was an athletic woman in her late 20s. Her shoulder-length brunette hair fell loosely around her shoulders. Her skin was a warm caramel colour, like she had come from a sun-kissed land. Her pale blue eyes were sharp and feline. That morning, she wore a white shirt and plaid skirt. She sat herself on the edge of my desk with a leap of feminine grace. Otto was looking for you, she informed me. He told me to kick you into his office as soon as you got here. Thanks, was my reply, still absorbed in my reviewing. I brushed my hair away from my face. I was always pale, but in those days of hard work, I was even paler. I gathered my strength. Discussion with Waddle took a lot of energy. He was the kind of man who didn't talk to you, but talked at you. You look like hell, Madeline commented, ever the crusader for honesty. Go and see what he wants. I'll get some coffee. Madeline slipped off the desk and made her way to the farthest end of the newsroom where the fresh coffee was brewed. I knocked on the door of the editor's office. I could hear Eric's voice inside having a one-sided conversation which suggested that he was either conducting a telephone call or some journalist was on the listening side of a hostage situation. I pushed the door ajar slightly. I caught a glimpse of Waddle standing behind his desk. His back was to me. He had a black telephone receiver placed to his ear. He heard me as I stepped inside because he swiveled round, smiled and waved at me, gesturing me to sit down. I gotta go, sweetheart, said Eric. If I hear anything, I will let you know. I took a seat across the desk from Eric, laying my papers on top. Eric Waddle was a tall man. He had a thick beard and always wore a long black ponytail. Some people may even say he looked like a Mark and not an Eric. But that's for another day. That was Sylvia Feltz, he informed me, even though I hadn't asked. Poor thing is still in shock, trying to piece together what happened. Jim and I go way back, and even I had no idea he was up to. Have nothing new, really, I ventured. Eric reached his heavy hand across, pulled my papers towards him. Doesn't matter, people can't get enough of this story. They're swallowing it down like buzzards and coming back for more. I think I've spoken to everyone he ever met. That is, everyone but you. Eric had been quite adamant that he not be included in any of the articles, but I didn't become the reporter I was by not chancing my luck. I've got nothing to say. Eric snatched up a glass bottle filled with whiskey and poured himself a generous share into a square-shaped glass by his hand. I asked you to come here because there's something that I wanted to talk to you about. Go on. As you know, times are tough. We can only handle the best, which is why they want you, Sam. Want me for what? I'm talking about full-time, Eric said, his face beamed with excitement. I don't know what to say, I stammered. Say yes, he bawled before emitting roars of laughter. These kind of opportunities aren't easy to come by these days. I stood. My actions became subconscious. That's a great offer. I'm very grateful, thank you. Well, don't thank me, just do what you do best, Eric dismissed, downing his glass of whiskey in one single gulp. The bottle was probably less expensive than the Mac & Sons brand he was used to, but decent alcohol was becoming increasingly difficult to come by. You don't have to be hanging around here all day. Go home and tell your wife the good news. You can start fresh tomorrow. My wife, Teresa, had studied journalism too. In fact, that's where we had met. When Teresa and I married, she gave up her career. Her mother blamed me for this, but the truth was I had been the one trying to discourage her from doing so. Teresa didn't want to take any chances on a writing career, when housewife was the most stable job to be had. I never corrected my mother-in-law as to whose decision it had been to give up. She already hated me anyway. She thought me too self-absorbed to be a suitable husband for her daughter. Her concerns weren't completely without merit. When I was caught up in chasing stories, I often missed what was happening to the people closest to me. Teresa would be excited, though. I couldn't wait to tell her the news. I was out of breath by the time I had got home, my heart beating forcefully with exertion and excitement. The drums of anticipation rattled in my ears. I fumbled for my keys in my pocket. I leaned against the door as I reached deeper into my pockets. As I did so, the door fell aside. It was very unlike Teresa to leave the door unlocked, even when she was at home. She was a cautious little thing, and home invasion robberies were happening a lot in her neighbourhood in the southwest side. Her humble home was a small, one-bedroom terraced amidst an array of similar granite buildings. What separated hers from the rest was the addition of an emerald green front door. Green was my favourite colour, and it matched the shade of Teresa's eyes. I called for my wife, but there was no response. Heaps of blankets lay across the worn sofa, which kept us warm without any extra cost. The scent of baking apples danced from the kitchen. Teresa had been baking apple pie, which she had always did when she had a rough day. The kitchen was a direct offset from the living room. I found Teresa in there, lurched over the cooker. She was weeping heavily. Her mousy brown hair was uncombed. When I pushed the swinging door open, she gripped a knife that was close at hand. She stumbled backwards, emitting a frightful shriek. When she saw it was me, she dropped the knife, ran at me, and threw her arms around my neck. She didn't ask why I'd come home so early. It was I who asked the questions. What happened? My heart was now beating to a completely different rhythm. I wasn't expecting you so early, she said. A woman was looking for you. What did she want? I asked. Teresa gathered her wits. She gave me an invitation to a club. And who was she? What was her name? I inquired, assuming it to be someone I had been questioning on the Felt story. Teresa shook her head. She didn't say. Teresa wandered into the living room and dropped herself amongst the blankets. She told me that this story on the mare could put you in danger. She said you were getting involved in something you shouldn't. I sat beside her and I put my arm around her shoulder. That's all nonsense, I promise. Teresa shuddered. She gave me this. She gave me a black business card. On the front read, The Knock Knock Club, with two finely shaped female figures on either side. It was an exclusive club in town. A club I would visit that night, and my life would be changed forever. So I admit, I gave it more than a second thought, holding the card tightly between my fingertips, wondering, who is this woman and what does she know about the mayor? Then there was the club, the Knock Knock Club that I'd been invited to. I'd never heard of it before, but the story on the mayor was leading me to some strange places. Why don't we go out and celebrate my new job? I suggested to my wife. She was apprehensive. No, Sam, she returned. I've had a long day. Can't you see how exhausted I am? Maybe getting away from the house will make you feel better. She shook her head and pursed her doll-like lips. You always do this, she slapped my arm impatiently. I took her in my arms. Fine. We'll stay here. She looked back at the living room. She must have decided getting away from the house was a better idea after all. Where will we go? I raised my eyebrows and offered a wry smile. I hear there is at least one club open. I may even be on the guest list. Teresa slapped my arm again, playfully this time. She managed to smile. That isn't funny, Sam. I put my arm around her. Don't worry. Nothing is going to happen to me. But I have to chase this story. It could mean big things for us. Unless you'd rather stay here. Teresa shook her head. No, I don't want to be home alone again, she started to sob. I'm sure you'll find that it was all for nothing. She probably just has some information on the mayor. Teresa hesitantly agreed. As I washed and freshened up, I couldn't help but wonder what kind of club the Knock Knock Club was, and what I would find there. Around 8 p.m, Teresa and I drove through the sun-scorched streets. The summer looked as though it was nowhere near ready to give up the fight. There weren't many people out, though. The shady city looked like a ghost town. The address for the club was in the southwest, in an area known as the Shanties. The Shanties was the most deprived part of the city. It was normally overcrowded and the streets full, but on that night, it was like a ghost town. Mayor Feltz had help in draining it of the last life it had had. I want to go home, Sam. I don't think we're going to find that club, Teresa said. I was just about to agree with her when I noticed a brazen neon sign flashing deep within an alley. The Knock Knock Club. Perhaps it was my own apprehension or maybe empathy for my wife's concerns, but I found myself asking, are you sure about this? Teresa gripped my arm. You're just going to ask some questions, right? I smiled and sighed. The nerves fluttered in my chest. I was never this nervous of a story. Perhaps it was because Teresa was with me. But as we approached the heavy door, I hesitated. The main street seemed a long way away. The door wasn't particularly welcoming for a nightclub. The sign above offered a light humming noise as the bulbs committed tirelessly to their duty. A man stood outside. He looked as though he was waiting for someone. Leant against the wall like a schoolboy hiding from the teachers. When he saw us, his expression changed from boredom to excitement in an instant. New faces, he cheered. Is this a Knock Knock Club? I asked. It was a stupid question given the sign, but I had to confirm. His stare lingered on Teresa. She smiled back at him girlishly. My name is Dennis, he told her. I'm the manager here. You just let me know if you need anything.
He took her hand and kissed it. It's always nice to see some new faces. Yeah, thought to myself. As long as they're women.
Dennis pushed the door open and the music from the club flooded out in a wave of excitement from the patrons. With a flick of his wrist, a scantily clad young girl dashed over to Dennis's side.
A good table, Lise, he requested. The girl, blonde-haired with a large beaming smile, nodded.
Sure thing, she said. Follow me, hun.
Teresa gave one final glance back at me and headed into the darkness. I made my way to follow her, but Dennis put his arm out across my chest and stopped me.
Oh, not so fast, buddy, he flicked his fingers. Invitation.
I passed him the invitation with a glare and headed on in. Lisa, the serving girl, offered us a menu each. They were simple, black with the same name of the club on them. My menu was sticky and well used. There was a stage as the main focus of the club. The band was deep in their music. The chorus girls were dancing around in a parade of sequins and feathers. The Knock Knock Club was actually so homely it would be pleasant if the brickwork walls didn't make it seem like a prison. Teresa was still nervous. She kept turning back to look towards the door. We ordered some food. It wasn't fine dining, but it was effective nonetheless.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The voice of the Knock Knockers band leader boomed over the soft playing. Most of the room looked up from their conversations and gave him their full attention, including my wife and I. Welcome to the Knock Knock Club. It's now come to that part of the evening we all love. I know it's my personal favourite. Please welcome on stage Knock Knock's very own Boss Lady.
In a rush of drums and wind instruments, like the welcoming flag parade of a queen, the man rushed from the stage. The spotlight caught a very striking woman in its clasp. She was met with a thunderous applause. She was accompanied by two bare-breasted dancers. She started to sing. Her voice was sultry but strong. The red dress she wore flowed perfectly across her model-esque body. When she smiled, I noticed a gap between her front teeth that gave her a charm that she knew how to wield. I turned back to Teresa. Her already pale face had drained completely of all colour. What's the matter? I asked. She reached her quivering hand out and pointed to the stage. I don't want to see some filthy show, Sam, she screeched. You shouldn't have brought me here. I just have to find out who it was that came to speak to me today. I turned back to the stage. The boss lady was singing a melody with a touch of old school cabaret. The drum beat was reminiscent of a military march. Her red dress glinted under the stage lights. Her voice was a pleasant tone, soft and warm like honey. Teresa remained frozen in her chair, staring at the boss lady, complete with appreciative calls from the crowd. Dennis walked by, so I stopped him. I need to speak to the one who owns the club, I told him. It's urgent. Dennis narrowed his gaze on me, but his handsome smile remained. He leaned over and pointed to the stage.
You're looking at our pal, he explained.
Come on, Dennis, cried one of the other patrons, inviting him to a card game.
Don't worry, my man, just deal me in, he replied over the music.
He turned back to us.
Enjoy your evening, folks, but I wouldn't go bothering her, he said.
His voice sounded different. His expression was softer. A woman approached him and called something into his ear. He put his arm around her and headed off to his card game. Teresa stood. She threw her arms up in exasperation. Where are you going? I asked, trying to grip her arm.
I'll wait for you outside, she spat. I'm not interested in this filth.
I gave a glance back at the stage and the woman in red looked down on me knowingly. Her smile stretched before returning to her audience for the last piece of their song. I was surprised that no one stopped me as I slipped backstage. At the end of a long hall carpeted in a sticky, well-used black, lay a door with the name Tabitha on it. I assumed it to be the boss lady's dressing room. I knocked. Come in, came the same silken sound to match the singing. Pushed open the door. The cabaret singer was looking into her mirror, so she turned to face me.
You're very lost, my man, she said. A smile formed her chestnut brown tresses, flowed over her shoulder. Her lips were still painted a bold red.
Unless you're a waiter and bringing me the drink I asked for, you shouldn't be in here.
I'm Sam Crusoe, I said with some severity. I am a reporter for the Colford Daily.
Then you really, really shouldn't be in here, she replied, unmoved.
I'm following the story on the mayor. I just wanted to ask you a few questions.
I wouldn't talk to a rag like the Daily, she said with a smile. These pages aren't worth putting down for a dog to piss on.
I remained calm.
I was told the mayor was a regular here. Did you hear anything about where he might be going?
Tabitha was still amused at her own jest about the paper.
Lots of people come and go here, Scott.
It's hard to keep track of them all. It's Sam. She waved her hand dismissively. Whatever. I'd like to ask some of your staff some questions. Maybe they saw something you didn't. Her smile widened. I wouldn't hold much hope on that. I pressed. Surely you would know the mayor of Coalford has been here more than once. Surely you would notice such a high-profile regular? She rolled her eyes. I think when you're as naughty as a man as Jim Phelps was, you're bound to make some enemies. Doesn't take an ace reporter to crack that one. I noted that she referred to him in a past tense. Did you know him personally? She flicked her legs over and leaned back on her chair. Not exactly. How do you know he was a naughty man, as you say? She gave that honeyed laugh again. It's not exactly a health spa around here. People that come here are looking to be discreet. It's not the kind of place men bring their wives. I thought of Teresa standing outside, waiting on me, so I made to leave. I have to go, but I'll be back. Hope you can give me some insight into what goes on around here. It would help trace the mayor's last steps. Discretion, Mr. Reporter, she said. My clientele wouldn't be happy if they found out I was advertising in a newspaper. It's bad for business. I do have one question for you, though. She stood and drew closer to me, her hands clasped behind her back. This club is by invitation only. How the fuck did you get in? I kept her gaze. I'll come back, I repeated. Perhaps if you remember something, it will help. I'll keep your name off the record. Miss T, is it? If you're going to come and visit me in my dressing room, how about you just call me Tabitha? My wife is waiting outside. But if I come back, will you give me a statement? Will you answer some of my questions? Pop quiz. We're all about the fun. I turned to leave, but she stood and pulled me back. I look forward to seeing your handsome face around here again, then. Apparently we just let anyone wander back here these days, she said. As the door closed behind me, I heard Tabitha's voice. You are so fucking gorgeous, she cheered. It seemed she had turned back to her own reflection. A woman was wandering down the corridor. I recognised her as the topless dancer that had been to the left of Tabitha during her performance. The dancer smiled in acknowledgement as she passed me, as though she wasn't almost as naked as the day she was born. It was no holds barred at the Knock Knock Club, and that was just the beginning. I managed to catch up with Teresa just outside the club. She was laughing and talking with Dennis. Is everything alright, pal? It was Dennis who spoke first. Fine, I replied coldly. Teresa linked her arm around mine and brought herself close to me. She still seemed to be a little shaken, but the night air was cooling and it was doing some work in taking away her cares. When we arrived home, we found our door lying ajar. We both stopped suddenly. Wait here, I instructed, leaving her and venturing into the house to assess the damage. The door hinges were broken. The furniture overturned. Upon initial inspection, it appeared that nothing had been stolen. Someone had just been trying to shake me up. What was clear, though, was that whoever it was, they were relentless. Teresa followed me in. She cried when she saw the mess. What have you done, Sam? Teresa cried. And that was a damn good question.